This is Encounters, a dialogue that brings you multifaceted life stories you don't want to miss.
They may bleed anytime if they hit something. So they had to inject clotting factors between workshops to help them stop bleeding or to protect them from the bleeding. So they did it like drinking water. It's very normal for them. But you can imagine how shocked I was when I saw those pictures, which was totally beyond my life experience. That must be the very first moment that I feel the purpose of philanthropic work. So clear and so close. Not just giving our money to people in need, it's not enough. I think making the most use of people's sympathy, enthusiasm, and wisdom, and sometimes even tactic and strategy to change the world. This discovery kept me going for years until now. We encourage entrepreneurs to think whether they can make money while doing good things to the society, not just shoulder some responsibility like you are carrying out a lot of costs of itself, but you think widely and creatively enough to make the business running out of the good things. That's the spirit of social entrepreneurship. I think the most blessed gift from my parents is that they set up the principle for me that to think for myself independently and try to be as open-minded as you can to new things and new ideas. And one thing they have been taught me is that knowledge is far more important than money and materials because it will follow you all your life.
Hello and welcome to Encounters. I'm your host, Man Ling. My guest today is Lin Hui. Hui has been involved in the not-for-profit sector for about 15 years. She started volunteering for an NGO in Beijing in 2005 while she was a graduate student at the University of International Business and Economics. One of the programs she signed up to provided training to leaders of the Hemophilia Association. Through this experience, she met face-to-face with hemophilia patients and heard their stories. This experience completely changed Hui's career goals, and she switched from aiming for a career in business to one centered on work with nonprofits. Today, she is the secretary of the You Change China Social Entrepreneur Foundation. In this episode, Hui shares with us the ups and downs in her philanthropic journey and talks about how she forged a path in life that she is proud of.
Your name is Lin Hui. I'm curious about your name, actually. Lin is not your surname, no?
That's my family name, actually.
There is a Chinese family name which means Ling Zero, right?
Yes. Perhaps it's interesting to understand a little bit more about my name.
Yes.
And everyone, like you, when we first met or they received my business card, they asked me the same question. Is this your real name? Why? Because it means zero in Chinese. And it can be empty. Or it can be infinity as well. It's very subtle.
I think it's Taoist.
Yeah.
You know, Chinese philosopher Taoist. It's just doing nothing means doing everything.
Being I think that's the secret of my family name.
Yeah, and, it's interesting.
And Hui means wisdom. And so my name can be full of wisdom or no wisdom at all.
So you have to be in between, or which extreme are you at? You think you're a wise woman? Are you a wise woman? Really? Tell me something. Have you ever been very stupid?
Oh, in life is too many. But, you know, yesterday evening, I was very serious about this invitation, this interview thing. So I prepared my speech, actually. Then when I went home, I think that I have left my wallet in the office. So I called my colleague. Would you please help me to get my wallet tomorrow? Because I have to get in the office for an interview. And then this morning, when I searched my school bag, I found, oh, it just lying in the bottom of my bed, covering by some books and a page. Yeah, I think a lot of people will say that, what's wrong with you? You've been working too busy to take care of yourself.
But this is not an exception. Such thing happen every day, right?
Yeah, so it's not the typical stupidness, right?
Yeah, I think we are the same kind. You know, very, very stupid at certain things. And then sometimes you think yourself very wise. Tell me one example that you think, oh, I have wisdom in doing such a thing.
Wow, I have a lot of examples for that as well.
One
best thing is that before the Spring Festival, our foundation used to work on papers, something we do WeChat, but not formal. So if we want to get some documents signed and passed to next process, we have to hand in person. And before the Spring Festival this year, 2020, I started, I don't know from where, very determined to have this ding-ding system installed for later digital transformation for every organization. And within our foundation, we don't have much experience, or we have bad experience of putting OA system and everyone didn't feel very comfortable to use it. But I became the agent of change to drive the installation, the customization, and put everything in place. So we all know that after the Spring Festival, the pandemic, everyone had to stay at home and work from distance. So it became the infrastructure of our foundation to work as normal as we can to proceed all those documents and procedures in place. So I think that might be the most recent wideness and the brightness,
yes,
of
very
my experience. Yeah.
Yeah, you are the driver of using this internet sort of social distancing technology, we call it, so that to keep everything running as normal. So we call it as kind of a new normal. And this interview is being conducted in such a new normal way.
Yeah.
You have mentioned yourself, your name.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned your organization. And would you please, beside the name, we need to know more about you. So who are you and which organization are you serving?
Mm-hmm. Now I work at UChange, China Social Entrepreneur Foundation, which is a private charity foundation that working nationwide. I'm the secretary general based in Beijing. I'm also a mother of a 7-year-old boy, which is very troublemaking age. But I enjoyed it. And I graduated from UIBE, University of International Business and Economy, with a master's degree in business administration. Then I went to study on the University of Nottingham for my second master in corporate social responsibility.
You are majored in business administration and corporate social responsibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
Please tell us, what's the difference between just being a business and then being shouldering for enterprises? You call them social enterprises, right? For them to shoulder the social responsibilities that is necessary. This is the thing that you are pushing, that corporates or companies need to shoulder some social responsibilities. Tell us, because this is not very, very popular here,
mm-hmm.
but maybe in the Western society, it is a school of business. But here in China, you are the promoter of it, and you are one of the driving forces, and your organization has been doing it for how many years?
For 13 years.
13 years from the very beginning, the organization was set up, starting from day one. Mm-hmm. You and your organization has been promoting this. Why?
It's a very, very profound question to answer. The very original business administration teach us the principle of maximizing profit for the shareholders. But it's changing now because the company lives or operates in the society that we have so many stakeholders rather than shareholders. We have customers, we have regulators, and we have our vendors and other kind of partners in the environment. So the company itself has to shoulder some responsibility for those stakeholders. That's the core thinking of CSR. But the social entrepreneur or the social enterprises our foundation has been promoting is a little bit more further than that. We encourage entrepreneurs to think whether they can make money while doing good things to the society, not just shoulder some responsibility like you are carrying out a lot of costs of itself, but you think widely and creatively enough to make the business running out of the good things, environmental protection, or like we see a lot of organic agriculture and education and a lot of good things that society needs can be profitable. So we just need to open our eyes to find those opportunities. That's the spirit of social entrepreneurship.
But when was the seed planted in you? Because you have to have it first. Mm-hmm. Then you want to promote this concept of social responsibilities and social values to everybody else. Mm. Starting from when?
In one of your questions, it's very interesting, is that, did I get it from my parents? Yeah, that's very interesting for me to recall the childhood and the youth that I spent with my parents. I think the most blessed gift from my parents is that they set up the principle for me that to think for myself independently and try to be as open-minded as you can to new things and new ideas. And one thing they have been taught me is that knowledge is far more important than money and materials because it will follow you all your life. And I remember that when I was a little girl, on weekends, I always want to go to the street shops with my parents because then I can buy something. And if I want to buy a toy or a dress, I'm allowed to buy only one piece. But if I want to buy books, there's no limits.
Books. Do you think this is typical of Chinese people who, every one of us, we emphasize education so much?
Not really, because I was born in Guangxi, and some other parents told their daughter that there's no need for too much schooling and education. But my parents, they said that you should study more. If you want to pursue a doctor degree, we can support you if you are determined enough. I didn't get that far.
How do you understand your parents in their emphasizing of your education? What sort of family influences did they receive from their parents, your grandparents?
My grandparents were farmers. Yeah, farmers mm-hmm. in the village. Mm-hmm. It's a small but beautiful village in Guangxi. I think it's after high school, my parents got the opportunity to work in Liuzhou, which is a city in Guangxi, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and then change their life.
By what sort of chances they go?
I think it's called recruitment of the workers.
They were employed by factories, right?
Yeah, by the state-owned factory.
And then that's the eye-opening experience for your father.
Yeah, for my father and my mother.
They work in the same factory.
Yeah, that's okay. Where they know each other and get in.
They get in love. Then you were born. Yeah. And then in that factory, did your father do very well by climbing social ladders?
Yeah, he's very clever. And He was the founding manager of two small state-owned enterprises. And I can see and I can feel the sense of opportunity or the sense of responsibility that he want to lead the 100 staff out of the hardship during the reforms. Yeah, I think that's the very important phase of my childhood experience, is that I can see how hard he worked. Yeah.
Yes. Starting from being a worker, right? Mm-hmm. And he gradually were promoted to factory management positions. And he took care of 100 set of employees who were faced with being laid off because of China's economic restructuring, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is that the moment when you saw your parents taking care of the livelihood of his peer workers? Is that the very seed that planted it in your mind that it's not just the making money? It's taking care of people.
My mom is always ready to help others.
Very kind, right?
Yeah, very kind. She teaches Tai Chi and dancing for free. And she learned some traditional Chinese medicine from my grandpa. And one day, this lady, one of her friends, had a stroke and cannot move, just hopelessly lie in the bed. And my mom was brave enough to give her skin scraping and then bring her up like she can walk on her feet. I was so proud of my mom at the moment. And I think I get most of my kindness part from my mom. And I recall in high school, I read a magazine called Southern Window, Nanfeng Chuang, which is not a typical high school student reading. Because those days, I remember that my dorm mates, they were reading sports and entertainment of the movies and stars.
But
the topic I had discussed with my father from Southern Window is the living situation of the miners and the land reform policy and reform and open up policy of China, something like that. It's a very serious topic. And my father treat me very serious as well, as I am an adult who can understand those big issues. I'm so gratitude that they raised me like what I am now.
Actually, it's your father who influenced you in that way, that you cared about what's going on in the society and in economic reform of the country, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to know the situation, then you can help. It's your father, help these workers. Okay, what sort of expectations did your father or your parents have on you as a little girl? They brought you up and, you know, they have high expectations on you, but they definitely have a clear sort of picture of your future. What is that?
On the contrary, my father's expectation is that I become a public servant in the government. Maybe I think he felt so unsecure in the market. So he wants his daughter to be as stable as I can.
But go back to when you decided not to become a public servant. What was his response then?
I think the process is very long, actually, because I grow up and go to the college for business administration, want to be entrepreneur like him. Yeah, that's the first moment that he realized that I may not want to be a public servant. And then he kind of accepted, business is as good as public servant. He persuaded himself, maybe. But after my 2 master degree, I decided to work in NGO, a nonprofit sector. He's confused again. Yeah. In China, it's not popular to work in nonprofit at that time. Yeah, even today.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you chose business administration as your major. And then you went on to get a master's degree also in business administration. And you went to the University of International Business and Economics, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Yeah, University of International Business and Economy.
Okay, so undergraduate and a master degree, you all learned about business administration. And then you started to do volunteering in university.
Yeah.
How did that happen? It's a school-organized volunteer project, or it's some sort of a spontaneous thing organized by students themselves?
Actually, I met my boyfriend.
Now your husband?
Yeah, now my husband. We met in the theater society.
Mm-hmm.
And then we fell in love. And after graduation, his mom actually introduced me to this NGO because she's the volunteer in Huizeren. And she kind of realized that I am very enthusiastic to these social issues. So she introduced me to Miss Jia Yan, who turned out to be my mentor in civil society. Then I've done a lot of translation, editing of books and magazines on capacity building for NGOs in China.
I want to know the initial response, the initial feedback when you are doing something, helping others, or you know, working in a volunteer sort of project. What did you get?
In the very beginning, I was helping translating and editing books. And the topics, including strategy, fundraising, project management, human resource management, volunteer management, and governance, etc., is like similar version of business administration. So I'm kind of an expert in that respect. But there was a program funded by World Hemophilia Federation to provide training to Chinese Hemophilia Association leaders. I was the program manager. And amid that time, I had intensive exposure to all kinds of hemophilia NGO leaders from all over the world. Some of them are on wheelchairs because they hit their legs or ankles sometime in their life. And the internal bleeding will not stop. So that will become disabled to walk. So they were on wheelchairs and some were using walking sticks. But some of them, because their supporting environment is so good and they know the disease knowledge very well, they seem perfectly healthy apart from other hemophilia patients. And some were the parents of hemophilia sons. And this genetic disease passed on to sons, not daughters.
God.
Yeah. Yeah, so most of them are male, but some of the leaders are parents because the mom passed on the disease to the son. So they feel very guilty about themselves, but it's not their fault.
Was that the first time that you came to know that we have so many hemophilia patients?
Yes.
And before that, they were
they're invisible to the public and not that to my life experience. And they may bleed anytime if they hit something. So they had to inject the aid of clotting factors between workshops to help them stop bleeding or to protect them from the bleeding. So they did it like drinking water. It's very normal for them. But you can imagine how shocked I was when I saw those pictures, which was totally beyond my life experience. And I met this lady who is the mother of the hemophilia son. We are still friends now. We're still in contact with each other. She told her story to the class and how hard she tried all sorts of measurements to seek for the help from the members of local people's political consultative conference.
Yes.
And to submit a motion of covering the cost of hemophilia treatment in the social medical insurance system. And they finally got in. And thereafter, it benefits all the hemophilia families in Chongqing. It's a local policy. And I was the interpreter as well. So by listening and telling her story with all my heart, I was so moved to tears.
And later, we have such people, for example, leukemia and cancer, the treatment, the bills of treating these diseases gradually, one by one, they become included into public medical care system. Mm-hmm. So it is the individuals like your friend who are making this effort to cover as many people as possible. So you were actually touched by people like her.
Touched by her will to survive and her determination to benefit all her peers.
Others.
That must be the very first moment that I feel the purpose of philanthropic work. And so clear and so close. And not just giving our money to people in need, you know, donate some 10 yuan or 100 yuan. It's not enough. And I think making the most use of people's sympathy, enthusiasm, and wisdom, and sometimes even tactic and strategy to change the world. This discovery kept me going for years until now, I think. That's the very first moment.
Go back to when you were in university. Mm-hmm. You chose corporate social responsibility as your major. This was a totally new thing in China. Chinese universities didn't have this major. Maybe now we have the social responsibility, sort of corporate social responsibility major. But in the year you chose to study it, definitely there was no such a major.
Mm-hmm.
What made you to choose that major, which is, we say, 冷门, very unpopular. Yeah. And that means you're going to be broke. You don't have money to earn in the future. No money prospect, right?
In the very beginning, I don't know what to choose. But I know that I don't want something. I remember I went to an interview in a real estate agency for internship, which is the must-do of the students. I was wearing high heels and suit, and I was told that my job was to show different clients apartments and shops until the deal was closed, and I would get paid on commission. I found it extremely boring, and on the way out, I realized I would not be satisfied just working for a company and making money. So I know I want something bigger than that. So volunteering part is so attractive. Then I met the first batch of NGO leaders, not just the hemophilia leaders, but all kinds of NGO leaders in China, because we have several programs. And they started their work years ago before I come to know them. And they are being aware of their purpose, were to speak up for the disadvantaged and underprivileged. Tackle social challenges is their mission in their life. So I have the instinct that what I learned in school for 7 years of business has prepared me for this.
Can be useful to them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because they only know their course. They don't know how to run an organization, how to, you know, do promotion, something businessmen would know. So I think it would be more useful to be in part of the nonprofit sector than in the business sector. That's the second discovery of my life, maybe. Then I think those lessons I learned would help them amplify and sustain the noble cause and bring greater impact on society. So I'm thinking of doing something social, you know, business plus social.
And then
so when my B school's classmates, they were busy in applying jobs at PwC, McKinsey, investment banking, I just submit an application to study CSR in the University of Nottingham, which is very rare.
Yeah, I know, rare and kind of unacceptable to many people. So what was the response from your peers and teachers and, you know, family members? What sort of responses?
My parents, they said that, okay, if you can get a scholarship,
respect.
Because we don't really have too much money for you to go study abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And my tutor, she's so nice. She writes my
recommendation.
Yeah. And because I was doing volunteering job and she know that I was different in the class, she also accepted my dissertation for B school graduation is to talk about participatory training in NGO sector.
Wow. Your dissertation is about participatory training in NGO.
Yeah.
That's quite advanced in thinking, I think.
Yeah. And I got a very high score for that.
From her.
From her and for another two judges, you know.
Scholars committee, right?
Yeah. The scholars committee gave their approval. So I'm very lucky to do NGO study in B school and got the degree. And she said that she can see the difference in me than others. I think she's kind enough to understand me and give me the freedom to choose. And my classmates, I'm not sure they understand what I was doing. Yeah.
I wanted to know that the first time you came to be systematically trained, the knowledge of corporate social responsibility, it's kind of enlightening, or it's something like an eye-opening experience? It's completely new.
New, yeah. It's new in two ways. Is that I study abroad. The language, the culture is different. And the topic is very cutting edge as well. In China, you know that there's no such a measure of corporate social responsibility. And even in the US, I think there was no such a thing. There is not a measure in that area. But when I searched on the internet, I found there's a separate center. It's called International Center for Corporate Social Responsibility. So they have several professors, and I think there are 10 courses around corporate social responsibility, like the strategy of corporate social responsibility, the stakeholders dialogue, the social policy, and a lot of ethical debates, like what we talk about. Yeah, it's very in-depth design of the curriculum. So I'm very happy that I have the chance to study topic in so much details in cutting edge discussion about corporate social responsibility. That's the kind of the very academia route of what I have been doing to understand the very complicated or sophisticated discussion of those concepts.
Okay, and then when you come back, you got this degree, you got trained, you came back in which year, 2008?
At the end of 2008, I finished the dissertation and got the certificate of the degree. And then I studied the Advantage CSR consultancy firm, which is very immature at the moment. And I remember that one Friday afternoon, the sun shines very bright. And when I finished a training course to a senior management team, I was presenting the advice for them to integrate CSR in their strategy. I feel good about myself because when I was going through the slides, they all knocked like this. But after that, one of the manager led me to the corner of the classroom. He said that, "Miss Ling, it's all very good. We all agreed, but could you just help us to draft a CSR report? You know, I want strategy change, but they only want report." That's a wake-up call for me to see that the timing is not right and the market is not ready. I think I was too young to understand that. So I kind of gave up without a proper fight.
You didn't do anything.
I didn't go against their will. Yeah.
You didn't push.
I pushed a little bit, I think, but it's not a proper fight. So
you're not strong enough then.
Yeah, then
you were not strong enough.
So naive and young, you know.
Then after your own attempt failed, you joined YouChange, right?
Yeah.
Who was the one who introduced you into YouChange? YouChange is also a newly founded one, right?
It's in 2007. Yeah.
So 2 years already.
2 years. Okay. Yeah, and Ms. Zhai Yan, who is the founding director of the NGO I joined before I go to the UK, and she introduced me to the founder of YouChange Foundation, Madam Wang Ping, and I met her in her office. We talk about 2 hours. She present her vision of the development of China, future development, how we can achieve a more justice and efficient and sustainable human society. The vision is very appealing, and a great ambition to promote social innovation and volunteerism in China, and also her big plan to boom social enterprises in China. Yeah, I was just listened and asked a few questions during the 2 hours. I was blown away, you know. She's a tougher figure in my life. I'm not tough enough, you know. At that moment, I saw her strong will to accomplish those visions.
Where do you think Wang Ping's perspectives come from?
She actually told me in a lot of occasions. She has been working in the government and went to the U.S. for master degree in politics and also visiting scholar in the European Union, and also have years of working experience in consultancy and investment. So she has this cross-sector and cross-boundaries experience and exposure, and her thinking from a political angle is very profound. That's the angle I don't have by that time. So if volunteering is a window opened for me in the dimension of social, mm-hmm. I think Madam Wang Ping opened another window for me is politics. So she structured the organization's business in a way that will bring in cross-sectoral collaboration from the government and business and also the social organization's effort. Yeah, this is just now I realized that the political angle is from her to see our unique position in social governing.
And why do you think that the awareness of politics is important for NGO like you?
Yeah, this is another excellent question, is that NGO, the terms, the terminology.
It's a non-governmental.
Yeah, it's non-government organization, which is originated from the Western culture or their system. It is a part of non-government organization. But within China, the sociology is different. We have social organizations, what we call 社会组织, or charity organizations. It's not called non-government. It's acceptable to call it non-profit organization. So the terms implies the culture and system difference, but all the language we use is from the West. So we have to be aware that we are working in the Chinese framework, and our positioning is different from theirs. So our foundation is designed to contribute to the building of the better society, not just go against or just be on the opposite side of the government. That's not acceptable.
Yeah. In China, if you want to do a good job for anyone, individuals or organizations, you have to work within the culture and within the system.
Yeah,
you cannot turn yourself into rebels. You need the support of the government. So that's why it's important to have the government in consideration in any planning of your company. Right? You cannot just bypass the government part in order to fulfill something big, like you said. But the end result of a charity or philanthropy or volunteering a company is the same, is to help people to solve their life problems, to make they happier, right? It's the same. It's the same goal. So you work in different environment. It's like you're planting, you're growing sort of plants. Mm-hmm. You have different soil, but you want to grow the same fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Wang Ping is one of the mentors. You appreciated her political perspective.
Mm.
Do you have another mentor who helped you?
Dr. Tang Min, the very famous economist, he is the one who taught me that when we try to do something big, we should not do it ourselves. We should gather more partners. That's why we have this collective impact model to conduct our program. Because he's an economist, he always think about efficiency. That's the decision factor in his designing, I think.
Do you think he has achieved what he wanted to achieve?
Yes, we all achieve this together.
And are you satisfied with what you have achieved?
On halfway, I think. We will still need a lot of work. And the problem is still there. Even if China has eliminated extreme poverty, we still have a very large number of people who is still living under the higher standard of life. And the inequality of resources allocation is still there. So we have so much work to do.
Lin Hui says her experience volunteering for an NGO 15 years ago has continued to inspire her work in the nonprofit sector. She has found her life's calling through managing a foundation that promotes social justice and sustainable development. And the job has made her a more professional, strong-minded, and erudite woman. And that's the end of our show. I'm Man Ling. Thank you for joining me. Be sure to visit chinaplus.cri.cn and look for Encounters, where you will find other episodes of the show along with Man Ling's journals about our interviews.
How much do you really know about China's Song Dynasty? Maybe that it saw some of the most important inventions in the history of ancient China. Printed books, gunpowder, and the magnetic compass. Perhaps the biggest achievement of all, though, is that today, with all our science and technology, multimedia, knowledge, and thought, we are still marveling at the achievements of the Song Dynasty. Why we love the Song Dynasty. On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.